for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Over the past several years, billionaire industrialist David Koch has given $23 million to public television. His company is reportedly interested in acquiring the Tribune newspaper company. But last week, Koch resigned from the board of New York PBS affiliate WNET. In a new article published in The New Yorker magazine, investigative journalist Jane Mayer describes what happened to a pair of documentary films while David Koch was on the board, what led to his resignation, and what it could mean about the influence of big money on the media. Her article is titled, A Word from Our Sponsor, and Jane Mayer joins me in the studio. Throughout the hour, we'll look forward to hearing your questions and comments. Call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Welcome back, Jane. It's good to see you.
I'm so delighted to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Tell us about the movie Park Avenue, what it was about, and how it came to air on public television.
Well, it's an independently made documentary. It was funded by others besides public television. There was some public television money in it, but it was kind of developed separately from public television. So when it was ready to air, it was what was in it was something of a surprise to the people at WNET, and not a happy surprise, as it turned out, because the documentary, which is made by Alex Gibney, who's an Oscar award-winning documentary maker, and has done a number of tremendous films. Anyway, it was meant to focus on the growing economic inequality in America, and the way he decided to tell the story was to focus on one building in New York City, 740 Park Avenue, as the epicenter of concentrated wealth. And it's a building that is incredibly expensive to live in and has a very high concentration of billionaires living in it. And so Alex Gibney looked at this building, and then he contrasted the lives of its residents with the residents at the other end of Park Avenue who lived in squalor. And it was just an exploration and a meditation about the sort of inequality in the country. But the reason this was an unhappy surprise for WNET is one of the residents of the building turned out to be David Koch, who was a trustee on the board of WNET. And so this film was just kind of taking direct aim at one of their trustees and portraying him in not the most flattering light, in subjecting him to a pretty tough scrutiny. And when the station discovered that this trustee was about to be portrayed, among other things, as the cheapest tipper in the building, even though he's worth $40 billion, all hell broke loose, basically.
The Park Avenue director, Alex Gibney, interview the Koch brothers for the film.
He certainly tried to do so. He and his production firm sent two emails to the Koch brothers asking to interview them. And then eventually, the spokesman for Koch Industries, which is the privately owned company that the two Koch brothers basically own, it's a company that does $150 billion worth of business every year. It turned down Gibney for an interview. But the spokeswoman for Koch Industries told me when I called about this that she had no record that Gibney had ever approached her for an interview, and it was one of the things that angered them. But Gibney actually, he is a documentary maker, and he documents things really well, and he had the paper trail. So he did what reporters are supposed to do. He tried to contact them. He was turned down for an interview. And so part of what happened next, this is important for, because The Kochs did have an opportunity to comment in this documentary, and they decided not to. Instead, WNET, as things unfolded 3 days before the documentary aired, decided to give them special privileges for commenting in privately, separately from the documentary, hand over the public airwaves so that they could go on the air and say whatever they wanted about the documentary.
Did they ask for changes to be made to the documentary, or did they simply view it and then say, we'd like to comment afterwards?
Well, actually, neither. One of the things that was really unusual about this was they did comment about the documentary. The company wrote up a statement slamming it as divisive and disappointing, but they actually never bothered to view it. So PBS, WNET ended up airing a statement from Koch Industries dumping on its own programming from someone who'd actually never taken the time to watch the programming. And I asked the spokesman at Koch Industries, how could you have criticized it if you didn't watch it? And she said, well, they watched a trailer that was, I think, a promo on the online. And then I asked Alex Gibney, how long was that promo? It was 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And on the basis of that, they went on the air and you know, dumped on the programming. But David Koch told the president of WNET that he didn't need to see the documentary early. He also wasn't sure how he was going to react to it. He said he would watch it and see. Nonetheless, all weekend long before this documentary aired, WNET was in a swivet with the president of WNET trying to figure out what he could do to try to, it appears, sort of mollify David Koch.
And that, of course, is because David Koch had given some $23 million to public television over the years, starting, I gather, with WGBH in Boston.
Yes, he first joined, became a trustee of WGBH, I think, in the late 1990s, and then in, I think, 2007 or 2006 or 2007,
six,
he went on the board of WNET. And there was something else I discovered going on during all of this, which was apparently this was a particularly acute time for WNET because David Koch was set and had discussed plans to give the station a seven-figure donation. At the least, it was seven figures or more. He's worth, again, $40 billion personally. And so he was going to help them out with what was going to be an ambitious capital campaign. But when this documentary aired, he changed his mind. So there was a serious amount of money on the table that he then took off the table after this documentary.
And he resigned from the WNET board.
Just last week, yes. And he resigned from the board because of his anger at what they aired. So altogether, this was, to me, as someone writing about the influence of concentrated money on the media, it was interesting because what you see is that with patronage comes influence. And so at a time when the Kochs are thinking reportedly of buying the Tribune Company, you get to see a little foretaste. And what you get to see is they are not happy about having what you might call strenuous coverage of themselves.
But, Jane, aren't you sort of leaping here? I mean, we did invite the Koch brothers to come on to the program this morning. We did invite the general manager of WNET to make a comment this morning. We received written statements from both. Is there any, what is your major concern about what happened here? David Koch certainly had a right to pull his money off the table. He certainly had a right to resign from the board. it doesn't seem as though WNET changed the documentary to reflect favorably on the Koch brothers. So what is your major problem?
Well, I think it speaks well of WNET that they did, in fact, air this documentary despite the pressure they were under. And I think you have to give them credit for that. But the concern, I think, is twofold. One, they changed the introduction to the documentary.
Changed the introduction.
In New York. The station changed. Basically, New Yorkers saw a different version than the rest of the country, one that was more critical of the documentary as it introduced it. It said it was provocative and controversial, which is different from the introduction that the rest of the country saw. So there was some change in the programming. But more importantly is that they allowed a donor, a major donor, to go on their public airwaves and rebut a documentary that they aired. And they gave him unfettered access to their airwaves to put up a statement, which he did through his spokeswoman. And that is not precedented on public television. I spoke to the spokesman for WNET, and I spoke to the spokesman for PBS, and they couldn't think of a single other time when this has ever happened, where someone from a documentary was just given the chance to rebut it afterwards.
Jane Mayer, she writes about politics for The New Yorker. Her article, A Word from Our Sponsor, is featured in the May 27th edition of the magazine. You can see a trailer of Park Avenue at our website. Stay with us. And welcome back. Jane Mayer is with me. She is a reporter. She writes about politics for The New Yorker magazine. Her article, A Word from Our Sponsors, is featured in the May 27th edition of the magazine. The article she wrote talks about two films, one called Park Avenue, the other a feature on the Koch brothers, and I want to talk about that one as well, Jane. Before I begin reading you emails and we take calls from our listeners, tell us about that second film.
Well, the second film was by two young filmmakers, Carl Diehl and Tia Lesson, who've also been nominated for Academy Awards for a film they did about the Katrina storm in New Orleans. And they were doing a story about the influence of money in politics. And they were in sort of development with the part of public television that develops independent films. It's called ITVS. And anyway, they were sort of trundling along. They'd gotten green-lighted for $150,000 in programming. And they were getting, I've looked at a paper trail on this. They, too, as documentarians, kept everything. And basically, they were getting all kinds of good feedback until the Gibney film ran into its problems in New York. And suddenly they hit all kinds of alarms went off because they had decided to name their film Citizen Coke, which was because the reporting they were doing, they were looking particularly at Wisconsin's politics, where the Koch's political organization, Americans for Prosperity, was a major player. And so the narrative had naturally, the reporting had led them to reporting about the Koch brothers' influence on politics. But this happened just as Gibney's documentary was angering David Koch in New York, and the WNET is the largest station in the network of PBS affiliates. It's an incredibly important station. And the little tiny part of PBS that creates independent films had been yelled at by the head of WNET, and because he felt blindsided by the earlier film. And basically, one thing led to another, and the film Citizen Coke got killed by ITVS. And according to all kinds of phone calls that have been documented by the documentary makers, they were told to change the title, get the Coke's name out of the title, change the storyline so to de-emphasize its focus on the Coke's. And basically, eventually they were told that it was a no-go, and their film was killed, not funded, and so there was kind of a chain reaction that followed from the Gibney film that ended up in killing another film in the pipeline about the Kochs. So you can see that they're, you know, from at least the filmmakers feel they were censored for political reasons. Gibney feels that Koch was given special privileges and to criticize his film without seeing it on air. And basically the sense is there was that the filmmakers have is that there was undue influence used by one of the funders.
All right, let me read to you a statement we've received from Kelly Spector, who's Senior Director of Communications and Marketing at WNET, New York Public Media. She says, WNET aired the Alex Gibney documentary Park Avenue as scheduled on November 13th, 2012. We did not give preferential treatment to the subjects of the film, given the film's focus on our New York community and its provocative content. We also aired a subsequent roundtable discussion featuring participants with forceful and widely differing views on issues of wealth, poverty, and political influence. We have previously used roundtable segments to expand on programming covering controversial topics. We invited Mr. Koch and Senator Schumer, the two main characters in the film, to participate. They both declined, provided brief statements, which we included in the program. And she concludes, by airing Park Avenue in its entirety, and by expanding the dialogue about its content, WNET's actions were consistent with our editorial guidelines, those of PBS, and our mandate to serve the public interest.
Well, again, I give them credit for running the documentary that was so critical of one of their trustees. But their statement's a little bit of a diversion. The issue really isn't the roundtable, which was which they've done some of before, and I think it's a good idea for public television to have roundtables with all points of view. Problem was twofold. Again, one was the roundtable did not include the filmmaker, so he was Alex Gibney says he was unable to defend his work, and
he was invited.
He was not invited, and David Koch was invited. But more importantly, David Koch was given a chance to put a comment up on the public airwaves, rebutting of the programming of public television. And that is not something they've done before. As I said, neither the spokesman for PBS nor the spokesman for WNET could find any other examples of that. And I interviewed Neil Shapiro, the president of WNET, and he acknowledged it was very unusual. He said, in fact, that David Koch is the only member of that film, the only person covered in it, who he called. He said, "I only just called David Koch. He's on our board. He's the biggest main character, no one else, just David Koch, because he's a trustee. It's a courtesy." In other words, he called him because he was a trustee who was going to be giving an awful lot of money. I asked Neil Shapiro, "Well, did you give him this chance just because he was going to be giving you a lot of money?" And he said no. But he couldn't think of any other time when he's ever given anybody a chance to just go on the airwaves with a rebuttal like this. So it is a one-of-a-kind sort of situation, and one that rings lots of alarms for people who are concerned about the power of sort of concentrated money affecting coverage.
All right, let me read you an email from Jay, who says, "I was concerned some time ago when it was reported George Soros made a sizable contribution to fund reporter positions at NPR. Does your guest believe that such funding affects the impartiality of the media? And if so, why should we view any NPR as more pure than reporting which is sponsored by commercial interests rather than ideologues?"
Well, first of all, I don't know if that's true. I've never seen that George Soros funded reporters at NPR. It could be, but I just don't know anything about it. But I think the sponsorship by any ideologues raises alarms in the minds of people who watch the press. And I mean, what is interesting to me about, you know, the Koch brothers is that, unlike there are a number of families that have owned news organizations. You know, you look at the Sulzbergers at the New York Times or the Graham family of the Washington Post.
Of course.
But what you don't see by them is the kind of political operation that the Kochs have. They are big players in politics. They were among the largest funders of in the last presidential campaign. They have a very distinct political point of view, and they are lobbying and making hundreds of millions of dollars of contributions along with friends that they help sort of corral into giving contributions. And they have an organization, Americans for Prosperity, that is out there working as a advocacy group, and they're not like the other families that own media organizations. And they are much more politically active, as far as I can tell.
They too sent to us their own statement, which begins by saying, "New Yorker's Jane Mayer distorts the facts and misleads readers again." It begins by saying there are many flaws, omissions, and inaccuracies in her article, falsely claiming David Koch manipulated programming decisions at WNET in New York. However, Ms. Mayer's fundamental failure is that there is not a single fact in the piece showing any such conduct by Mr. Koch. That is because these facts don't exist. No special treatment was ever requested or expected, and Mr. Koch, on principle, has never interfered with WNET's programming decisions.
Well, I mean, one of the things that also makes Coke Industries so unusual is they have such an aggressive PR department. They seem to spend full time attacking reporters, and they always do it in such a personal way. It's really, I can't think of another company like that, that, just constantly goes after people.
And, but let's talk about what they claim.
Well, I mean,
special treatment was ever requested or expected, and Mr. Coke has, on principle, never interfered with WNET's programming decisions.
Well, of course, what they've done, I mean, that is, they've sort of built a straw man there. The piece is very carefully reported. Everything was checked with the spokesman for the Cokes. There's no error in the piece. It simply states what happened. And what happened was that David Coke was very unhappy with the documentary that aired and took his money away because of it. It doesn't say what they're saying it says. They're basically denying their own story, not my story. So, it's frustrating to deal with them. You try as a reporter. You really want to get all sides and you want to get it right. But they don't make it easy.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Here's another quote from the Koch brothers saying, Ms. Mayer writes that for decades, Mr. Koch has attempted to make an, quote, ideological inroad, in parentheses, at WNET, enabling him to exert influence over a network with prominent news operation. No factual basis is provided.
Well, just by joining the board of WNET, he's obviously taking a position where he's in a position to have influence. And that's what we saw in this. I mean, in a way, the whole story, everything that's happened in this story pretty much illustrates exactly what those two documentaries said, which are there are people with very concentrated wealth who are exerting influence over politics and media, and it's worth taking a look at. And that's basically what both those documentaries said, and it's pretty much what the story says. There was a great concern, a concern at WNET that Neil Shapiro says and acknowledges he did not exhibit towards anyone else except David Koch, a trustee. He gave him an opportunity to respond to programming that he's not given to anyone else. The Kochs took advantage of that, and they used it, which is they knocked a program. They didn't stop to look at it first. The whole thing is very unusual. And then after that, in some ways, what's disturbing is it seems that public television self-censored after that. And there's no allegation that David Koch killed this documentary called Citizen Koch. What happened was public TV killed it. They were afraid to take him on after this. And it's much more subtle than the way that the Koch Industries is describing. It's really the way money works, frankly, which is all you need to know is seven figures is hanging out there as a possible donation, and it's going to influence what you do.
And so as government funding goes down, do you expect to see more of this?
I don't know. I mean, I think, personally, that it's also an irony that Americans for Prosperity, which is the political organization funded by the Kochs and founded by one of them, has pushed hard to cut the public funding for public television. So at the same time that you've got them pushing for less federal funding, they are taking, using their own fortunes to kind of earmark funding that they like. And I mean, I think it's a worrisome situation. It's not. It's different from public television in other countries. For instance, in Great Britain, public television is funded by a tax on people's television sets. And I think it helps insulate the programming, therefore, from private interests.
So this documentary, Fifth Avenue, Park Avenue, which listeners can see the trailer of on our website. you believe is an example of how big money can play a huge role in what we see on public television. We're not talking about public radio yet, but I'm sure at some point the same allegations might be raised about money going into NPR.
Well, I think everyone has to keep vigilant, you know, so that things like that don't happen. Park Avenue, really, though, one thing you have to say is it ran. It aired. The real casualty was the next film, which was killed in the cradle, basically. And that was the film Citizen Coke. And that one, it made it to Sundance. It was chosen as one of the films that were aired there, which is a great honor. But public television decided not to fund it after Gibney's aired.
Jane Mayer, she writes about politics for The New Yorker magazine. We're talking about her article featured in the May 27th issue. It's titled A Word from Our Sponsors. Your call when we come back. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. By the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. By the Langloth Foundation, supporting innovative health and mental health programs for underserved populations at langloth.org. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
After 40 years in politics, Senator Olympia Snowe decided to call it quits. The Maine Republican, on her frustration with Congress and how lawmakers can find common ground. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And welcome back. It's time to open the phones, 800-433-8850. First to Harvey in Key West, Florida. Good morning to you, sir. You're on the air.
I'm an old-line liberal, but I think, and I also produce media projects, but this is very silly. If someone was punching you in the face, would you sit and take it? The real one at fault is whoever was vetting projects to be aired on NET. If they didn't notice, then they are probably on the hook or to be fired. And they say that this billionaire is a power broker. Well, he's awfully ineffectual because he's coming off as a fool. If he went there to influence them, he's ended up with great egg on his face. So I would look at it as human nature. Is someone working for the New Yorker going to insult the boss of New Yorker in an article revealing dirty laundry and expect not to be chided?
What do you think?
Well, I think he's got a point. I think nobody wants to fund people attacking them. But I also think that This illustrates the problem, which is that that you've got somebody on the board of trustees who's extremely involved in politics, and if it makes it hard to cover him, you got a conflict of interest there.
Jane, there is another question. What about Senator Schumer? He had objections to Park Avenue as well. He was invited to be part of the rebuttal response at the end of the film. Schumer's staff argued the movie falsely accused Schumer of supporting tax loopholes for hedge fund managers.
That's right. And there was a back and forth about that as well. And Alex Gibney went back and he stood by his interpretation of Schumer's record. He had a professor from Yale on who was describing Schumer's position on closing the loopholes for hedge fund managers. And, you know, it's an issue that Schumer's had a lot of trouble with. There have been a number of times when he's objected to coverage of himself on this particular issue. He feels that I think in the past his position has evolved on it, which has made it complicated.
All right. And just to clarify, in October 2010, NPR did receive a $1.8 million grant from the George Soros-funded Open Society Foundation to begin a project called Impact of Government that was intended to add at least 100 journalists at NPR member radio stations in all 50 states.
And again, I think that could be a problem. You know, if I knew of NPR killing stories about George Soros, I think people would be very legitimately writing about it and asking questions about it.
Absolutely. Let's go to Indianapolis. Good morning, Rick.
Hi, Diane. Hi. You are the greatest. I am just absolutely shocked and appalled that NET would do such a horrible, horrible way of raising money. I'm just shocked and stunned at the stupidity of jeopardizing what I get and what I don't get. I only watch NPR or listen to NPR and PBS. It's the only non-biased place to get news and information. I'm going to go and donate some more money to WFYI in Indianapolis. I'm just appalled.
All right, sir. Thanks for calling.
I mean, I have a certain amount of sympathy, though, for the station, I have to say, because they have to get money from somewhere. And their federal funding has gone down to just 12% of the funding that they need. And so they naturally turn to, you know, it's like Willie Sutton robbing the banks. You go where the money is, and the money is in the people. It turned out in this case, amazingly, the people who live in the wealthiest building in New York, 740 Park Avenue. And not only did David Koch live there, but it turned out that the relatives of two other trustees of WNET lived there too, the parents of one and the brother of another, the brother of the chairman of the board of WNET. So you had a group of people living in that building with connections to the station. And I think it's fair to say none of them were happy about the documentary.
But what do you think that we, like Rick, should conclude from what occurred there at WNET? I mean, people have raised questions about bias on NPR, bias at public television stations. You know, as I said earlier, with government monies declining, you are naturally going to go to wealthy donors to help fund the programming you want to put on the air. That does not seem to be your concern so much as that firewall that's supposed to exist between funders and producers.
There's absolutely. I think it's a fact of life that the way the funding system works, there are going to be large donations made from wealthy people. That's just the way it's set up at this point, good or bad. But there has to be a firewall. And there are bylaws that belong to PBS about the news standards, about the importance of the integrity of the news, that say specifically stations have to insulate their content from improper pressure from donors. It's laid out very clearly, and it means the stations have to do that. Otherwise, you know, what people do see out in the country, which is very important, will be shaped and influenced by private interests. And I don't think that's what anybody wants.
Now, here's a question, an email from Rami. Could you and your guests talk about the Koch brothers' involvement in the popular PBS science shows Nova and Nova Science Now? Are the Koch brothers actively involved in climate denial? Weren't there allegations of his influencing certain episodes of Nova Science Now featuring David Puget as host?
I have read that. I don't know if it's true. I don't feel comfortable in, saying it's true unless I've reported it out myself. I just don't really know. And as you've heard earlier, the statement from Melissa Comey at Koch Industries says that David Koch has never interfered in the content of the programming. I just don't know. What happened in this particular story, I did know. I interviewed everybody involved up and down the line in all directions, and I know this is right. I just don't know what the situation is with Nova, but I do know David Koch is a major funder there.
Tell me who or what you believe is at fault here. Was it the station manager, Neil Shapiro, who made the call to David Koch? Was that the fault here? Was the fault David Koch saying, I want to change this film? Where does the fault line lie?
I think what concerned me was that the president of WNET offered a major funder who was about to give over $1 million to the station a chance to rebut the programming that he hasn't offered to anybody else. That, to me, was concerning. And part two of my concern was that the WNET management, which was hoping to get this money from David Koch, came down very hard on the unit of public television that helps nurture and sponsor independent films, and that they felt so much pressure that they basically turned around and killed a future film on the Kochs rather than risk it, rather than risk getting anybody mad at them. And they, to be fair, I need to give their side, which is they say that film had they had editorial differences with the filmmakers and that it had diverged from their original concept of what the film was going to be. That's what they've said. And the filmmakers, Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl, say their film was exactly what they said it was going to be and that the managers at ITVS changed their mind about it when they got scared of David Koch.
Let's go to Little Rock, Arkansas. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Diane. How are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
That's good. I've been listening longer since the first question came into my mind. I'd love to have your guests go back and review that question that you posed. I thought it was a great question about George Soros. She brushed that question aside as if he was that he's totally innocent, that he plays no part in what's happening in the media, and that's absurd. My question is has she spent the time that she spent on the Koch brothers on George Soros? You guys at NPR think that you are fair and balanced. I mean, you say that all the time, and you think you are, and I appreciate that. I mean, I understand your perspective, but there's a large group of people out here that don't feel that way at all.
Jane.
Well, actually, I have spent the time on George Soros that I've spent on the Kochs. I've written a 10,000-word piece on both of them. When Soros started pouring money into American politics, which was, I think, in 2004, I did a big piece about this. And then when the Kochs started pouring money into politics, particularly into groups that were sort of Tea Party activist groups, I did a big piece about them. I've been following the idea of money in politics from all directions. And I, as I said, you know, I think that if the Soros is funding specific programming, it's worth taking a look at. And definitely if you could find that someone killed a story on George Soros because they were afraid of his reaction, I think that is a completely legitimate story. I don't know that that's happened, though.
Again, that firewall between reporters and what or who they're reporting on has got to be maintained. And if management does not support that firewall, then there's a real problem. What about the PBS corporate response?
Just before going there, I wanted to say one more thing, which is I also wrote about Soros in the and his funding in the last presidential campaign.
Good.
So,
good.
So anyway, several times, actually. So PBS's corporate response, it's interesting. They basically said the stations are autonomous and what happens at WNET is NET's business. It was interesting to me, and that all questions of what NET did should be better put to WNET. ITVS, the place that develops these independent films for a show called Independent Lens and another show is Point of View, they put out a kind of a single statement, and it just they declined to answer any other questions.
And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's go to Bethesda, Maryland. Deanna, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for talking with me.
Sure.
I wonder if Jane feels a little uncomfortable with this story, considering that we've just found out that the IRS has been targeting conservatives. And, you know, let's assume the administration didn't know anything about it, and it just means there's a culture there. And I think these sorts of stories maybe encourage people at the IRS and elsewhere to think it's okay, because the Kochs are bad and Tea Party is bad, to do this sort of thing.
Jane.
Wow, I've never thought that I had the influence to direct the IRS. I don't give myself that kind of imagine that I have any such power.
All right, to Newport Township, Illinois. Good morning. You're on the air, Jim.
Yes, thanks for some very high quality journalism. I really appreciate
that. Thank you.
my comment is that U.S. taxpayer and U.S. government is the only foreign government in the world that directly funds Zionism, and the entire question, I believe, is avoided by public broadcasting for the same method of rationale that this program is discussing.
Well, it's not really what I was writing about, so I don't feel capable of responding to that, because I haven't really looked at that issue particularly.
And finally, to Hollywood, Florida, Sharon, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I called in right when you started, so obviously other thoughts have come to my mind too. But in politics, everybody has a different form of power, and that power is used to have some influence in the world. I know enough about the Koch brothers to know that they not only have money, but have not always been the most scrupulous people in the world. But my grandma used to say that no rich man is ever honest. So I guess it's pretty much true of Soros, too. But everybody, you know, you present stories that try to convey your point of view. And politicians, whether or not they have money, are also able to exert some influence.
Well, there's certainly no question of that. That's what politicians are out there to do, is to exert influence that they believe represents the thinking, the feeling of their own constituents.
It seems to me
this is a different kind of...
I think it's different. I mean, the Koch brothers are businessmen, extraordinarily successful ones, and extraordinarily wealthy ones, since they're each worth $40 billion, according to recent estimates. And what's interesting to me partly is I have heard through sources that despite the fortunes that they've got and despite the sort of political activism they've been involved in, they felt frustrated with the mainstream media. They feel that it doesn't tell the story the way they want it told. And I think you need to know that as they think about buying the Tribune.
As they think about buying the Tribune. Jane Mayer, she writes about politics for The New Yorker. Her article, A Word from Our Sponsor, is featured in the May 27th edition of the magazine, and you can see a trailer of Park Avenue at our website, drshow.org. Jane Mayer, thank you for being here.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Reed.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations.